Liquidation continued in the wheat market, making it difficult for the grains to move to the upside. But in the market conditions we've got right now, it certainly seems that some stability has come back to the grains. And livestock trade is still volatile, but the cattle market found a way to end on the plus side of unchanged.
Live from the sanctity of our homes via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we feature a conversation with Bill Biederman from AgMarkets.net. And right after the news, Oliver Slope from Blue Line Futures checks in. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorrie!
Oh, man. Are you getting bored, Davis? Is that what I'm detecting?
Well, I booked some studio time for the AgriTalk Men of Brass, and they didn't disappoint.
Well, it sounds and looks like you're going to have a little bit more time to spend at home. Uh-huh. Northeast Iowa. I think your home base is in District 6.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
mm-hmm.
right? God, I said District 6. It feels like the Hunger Games.
Yeah, it does. It's creepy. Something weird about it.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, here in District 6, we've now gone to a level 10.
How many levels are there?
Well, I think there are, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10.
This is the first I'm hearing of these levels. Like, they could have said, you are now under threat level yogurt. And I'd be like, oh, I don't know what the levels are.
Yeah, I think it's level 10, and we can't forget that Cedar Rapids and Dubuque are both in the community, and Waterloo,
yes,
are in our district, and as a result, there's enough hospitalizations now, mm-hmm, of COVID cases that here we are, level 10.
There go them city folks wrecking it for us all again, Chip.
Yeah. Well, the whole state of Wisconsin just went stay at home until May 26.
May 26.
Governor Evers up there pushed it out to May 26. And you and I were chatting about it before we went on the air. And producer Joe was in on it, too. If Wisconsin did it, Illinois is going to be right. And then mm-hmm. here comes Indy, and then mm-hmm. The dominoes are starting to fall on extending the stay at homes.
Yes.
At a time when we're talking about trying to figure out how to get everybody back to work or get at least some of the economy generating mm-hmm. some activity again.
Looks like Wisconsin is in fact confirmed at threat level squeaky cheese curds. So that's got to be worse than yogurt, right?
I think that is worse than yogurt. Yes.
I mean, at least the dairy's flowing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think the Iowa equivalent may be bacon fat. We are at level bacon fat.
Threat level
Iowa
bacon
here.
Fat.
Ooh, yes.
That sounds delicious.
It does. But does it get any better or, you know, so yeah. I don't know. Let's get to the news. What you got going?
Chip, export sales of wheat in the weekend at April 9 totaled just over 178,000 metric tons for old crop shipments and more than 419,000 tons for new crop delivery. Mexico and China topped the list of buyers. While new crop sales topped trade expectations, the new sales were not enough to slow the long liquidation that is weighing on wheat prices. Increased rain potential in Russia and Ukraine added pressure to wheat prices today. July hard red winter wheat was 10.25 cents lower, 476.75. July soft red dropped a dime to 530.5. July spring wheat softened 6.25 cents to 520.75. Seems like we had hope that maybe wheat would lead some kind of recovery here.
Yeah.
Am I remembering that right?
Yeah, and 4 days ago we had a high of almost 565 in July SRW wheat futures, and today here we are. We spiked support at 530. So, you know, we're 35 cents off the highs that we had just last week. No, that's Monday's high.
That was Monday, yeah.
Monday's high. Yeah, we're 35 cents off Monday's high in July SRW. Crazy. Mm-hmm.
Old crop corn sales in the weekend at April 9 lined up with pre-report trade expectations and came in at nearly 907,000 metric tons. New crop sales of 63,000 tons fell short of trade expectations. Chip on the old crop sales, Japan, Mexico, and Colombia topped the list of buyers. Technical selling and the collapse of the fuel markets continue to limit buying interest in the corn market as well. May corn futures were a half cent higher, 319 and three quarters. July corn slipped a half cent, 326 and a quarter. December corn closed at 341, down 1¾ cents today.
We had Jeff Cooper, president and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association, on the first hour of AgriTalk. If you didn't hear that, go and listen to it. The concern now is, we've got big problems right now, but how are we going to get enough of the industry to the recovery phase so that we can participate? Yeah, crazy.
Old crop bean export sales of 245,000 metric tons fell short of trade expectations, and new crop sales were a net cancellation, Chip, of 60,000 tons. That combination provided zero support for bean prices. Egypt was the most notable buyer of old crop soybeans. Strong soybean meal demand is helping to support prices, but softening crush margins are also threatening to take a bite out of the crush pace. Traders also note that Brazilian beans are once again arriving in China, which means demand for U.S. beans has, once again, shifted to late summer. May bean futures 5¼ cents lower, 836 and three quarters. July beans fell 6 cents to 845 and three quarters. November bean futures closed at 854 and a half, down 5¼ cents, Chip.
All right. Hey, you know what? Let's go ahead and bring Oliver Slope in here and get some perspective on what's going on in the livestock trade. Oliver Slope, Blue Line Futures. How you doing, buddy?
I'm hanging in there. How about yourself?
About the same. About the same. You know, we keep hearing about, and it's gotten to the point now where there are rumors flying around about some plant closures out there. But with everything that's happening, what do you make of the way that the cattle market is traded here this week?
You know, it's been pretty darn constructive. And it's, you know, something we talked about last week briefly on your show, and the market being, you know, forward looking. And if you look back, you know, we're really right at the same price that we were on in the middle of March for this April contract. So I think the market's done a fair job at pricing in a lot of bad news. I've got a string of bad news in my inbox and on my text here today. How much of that is already priced in, you know, to be determined. One thing we're keeping a close eye on here is the weekend. The weekend can kind of have that risk premium. So I wouldn't be surprised to see today's rally in the cattle market get sold into a little bit going into that. So we have gotten bad news over the weekend, and Mondays have recently been the most difficult days of the week. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that continue to be the trend here this weekend and going into Monday's trade.
Okay. All right. I want to take you back over to the grains here real quick. Wheat, July SRW, 35 cents off the highs that we posted on Monday. It's just like an anchor on the grains right now, isn't it?
It really is. Just a big technical breakdown here over the past couple of days. We broke below the low end of the range, and that took us for the May contract. Chicago, we're sitting right at about, you know, 528, 525 to 527. The 50% retracement are basically the middle of the range that we've seen here over the last year, as well as the 200-day moving average. It's an inflection point for us. Potentially, we see a little bit of relief rally, but the way it's going, we've been marking lower lows, lower highs. That could potentially take us back to those March lows below $5.
Okay. Great.
Sorry, Jeff.
Yeah. I'm not killing the messenger. You're just shooting straight with us there. Appreciate it so much. Take care of yourself. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
All right. That's Oliver Slope, Blue Line Futures. Coming up next, we got Bill Biederman from AgMarket.net right here on AgriTalk. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on, for our family and yours.
It's a good day for some Sugar Ray.
Sure.
Chip?
Yeah.
This was a really great album, by the way. I love the whole thing start to finish. Yeah. It was good stuff. That's
absolutely
all.
Absolutely. Cool. Cool. Welcome back. I'm Chip. That's Davis. Hey, we've got Bill standing by, but before we get to him, let's go ahead and get that livestock news in there real quick.
Sure thing. Well, beef export sales of more than 20,000 metric tons in the weekend at April 9 helped to limit selling pressure in the cattle complex today. Boxed beef prices are grinding higher to support futures. Heavyweight choice boxes up another $4.77 this morning, but on light movement. June live cattle gained $1.65 to close at $86.47.5, and August cattle jumped $1.12.5 to $90.65. May feeders surged $2.90 to $118.47.5. And on the snout side, export sales of pork last week were down from the previous week, but the tally of nearly 46,000 metric tons was still about 10% ahead of the four-week average. But labor issues at packing plants continued to limit buying interest, with hog slaughter off sharply from week ago. May lean hogs 212.5 lower, 37.32.5, and July fell 65 cents to 51.07.5. Quite the deal going on in the packing plants right now, Chip. We've talked about it quite a bit.
Certainly is. Certainly is. All right. Bill Biederman is with AgMarket.net. He joins us right now. How you doing, Bill?
Pretty good, Chip. Thanks a lot.
Yep. You and I have been doing this for a while, Bill. and I've never seen anything like what we're looking at right now.
You know, Chip, it really does remind me of the 80s. And you know, back in the 80s, we had the worst agricultural recession since the Great Depression, and it was very close to going that way. And that is how this feels now. This is a downward spiral. It hasn't stopped. Now, if you remember back in the 80s, Chip, you and I were both just new in the industry by about 6 years or less.
Yep.
And the government, okay, they don't care if the farmer's in trouble or if the one food packing plant is in trouble. But if it gets to the banking system, they step in, and that's what they did. They came in and they built all those bins and threw collateral on the balance sheet, and it absolutely helped those banks get out of racial problems.
Right.
So I don't know if they're going to do that again, but I think they've got to be having conversations.
Right. Hey, Bill, I'm going to give you a chance to go ahead and get off a speakerphone and onto the handheld if you can, so that we can hear you just a little bit better there.
Okay, but is you're that a little better then? Sorry.
Yeah, there you go. But you are exactly right. When it threatened to become and became a financial crisis in the 1980s, that's when the snowballs started to roll down hills, and there was no stopping it. Now,
yeah, they pulled out all the stops. You know, we had the Green Reserve, we had the Build Bin program, and I mean, there's things they could do this year. Hey, you know, President Trump just did a supply management program on the oil, and he coordinated it with several countries. Maybe we do a set-aside. Maybe President Trump can do that for agriculture, but, you know, negotiate South America and Europe in on it, too. I don't know, but they got to do something.
If they're going to get something like that done, they had better get moving and get it done like now, right?
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, we all know that the ag sector is so conservative, it's slow to move.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yep. And I'm glad to hear you say you'd have to negotiate with the countries with which we compete for export demand, because if you go out and do something like that on your own, you know what Russia would do, you know what Brazil would do. They would ramp up production to offset every bit that we take out.
It would be a heyday for them, and it would be a hay barn loft fire for us.
Right.
For sure. So it's got to be something that, you know, they really have to be thinking through, but it's got to be something that at the end result solidifies the profitability or the loan repayment capability of our ag sector. And I'm not just talking producers. I'm talking about ethanol. I'm talking about food processors. I'm talking about, you know, I can't even say some of the things because it might conflict with some of my clients, but it's deeper than just production ag.
Yeah, absolutely it is. Absolutely it is. What about what the government has done so far with they've pumped dollar bills into this economy as fast as they can. Yeah. And you still got to have a consumer that is confident enough to go out and spend those dollars, right?
Right, right. So we're monitoring three things on a weekly basis. And that is, you know, well, obviously, when do we get back to work? And hopefully today we'll get some guidance on that. Consumer confidence, you nailed it. I mean, people have money. They're getting paid via the different programs that are out there as much as they were when they were working, but they don't have any confidence to spend it. So we have to look at consumer confidence and consumer spending. And there's one other thing, too. And that's the retail CPI, because food prices are going higher. We can see that in our cutout values every day that we get. And what's going to happen is when we see the consumer confidence and the consumer spending uptick, and there's certain benchmarks that we need to tick over, that will indicate to the fund and investor money that inflation is starting. So when you inject money like they're injecting, historically speaking, it has never failed. It turns into a inflationary scenario. It turns into a negative dollar scenario. It turns into, oh, man, I should have bought that crude oil when it was at 28 cents or 20 cents, you know, or $20, I mean. So, yeah. I mean, you look back and everybody has regrets that they didn't take advantage of the cheap price because we go higher. So the world is looking at what's going on. I mean, I'm looking at it as the from this perspective, and I'm saying every country in the entire world, this is unusual, is doing the same thing. They're putting money in. They're doing everything they can to prevent this from turning into the worst case scenario, which is a depression. So if you're going to bet, I mean, typically government policy always dictates and manipulates eventually the markets. If you bet on a failure, you're betting on massive depression.
Right.
If you're betting on success, you better start looking for opportunities. Whether that's, you know, hey, you need to redo your long-term loans right now. You know, now as in the next 4 months, you need to be looking at buying feed. You need to be looking at buying, you know, maybe land. Maybe you need to be looking at how can I merge with some of my neighbors who I get along with and become more efficient. I mean, there's a lot of things we need to be looking at if you believe that the government policies and efforts around the world are going to be successful.
Okay, and if we are in agriculture are going to be looking at those kinds of shifts in how we are doing business, Bill, every industry is going to be looking at similar shifts.
Yeah, absolutely. My brother works for one of the airlines, and he just got a letter today, and the letter said that their traffic is 90% off. They said that their entire May forecasted travel volume is going to be less for the month of May than it was for one day of May a year ago. So, yes, industries are having to be forced to shift. I mean, just like call centers. Instead of call centers now being at a location where they got 200 people working out of a building, they're probably going to say, hey, we'll give you $50 a month to stay at home and work from your home.
Yeah.
You know, things are going to change. We don't know how it looks, but we do know that in the big picture, if our governments and central banks around the world fail at what they're attempting to do, it's going to be... I can't even imagine what that would look like, to be honest with you. But I don't think they will fail.
Okay. I was just going to go there. We are preparing for success, I believe. And you mentioned that in the past we've done some reserves. That's good for, or that was used in row crops, but our cold storage is full. Are perishable ag commodities, Bill? I mean, is it direct purchases that help the most, or do we just need direct payments?
Well, in the production side of agriculture, we either need to manage supply or we need direct payments, because right now we were on a farming interest we have up in North Dakota. Today's cash bid was $2.64 before your discounts. Yeah.
So we're $2.88 in Cedar Rapids.
Yeah, so we're losing, what, $100 and some per acre? I mean, you know, a $38 per county payment to us doesn't even come close. Right. One of our guys, Jim McCormick, found from a banker who he was talking to, said that if things don't improve, I can't even tell you the percentage of people
that will be in trouble. Bill, we're going to come back to that conversation when we come back. We're talking with Bill Biederman from AgMarket.net. Right here on AgriTalk. It's time for Pro Farmers Headline News, featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. Business execs tell Trump a lot more testing is needed. In the first meeting of President Trump's council to reopen the U.S. economy, banking and financial services executives said the administration needed to dramatically increase the availability of coronavirus testing. Markets brace for another multi-million weekly jobless claims figure. Last week's U.S. jobless claims were reported at about 5 million. The exchange trims Argentine production estimates, coronavirus restrictions to diminish wheat use in the EU. USDA continues to ready the ag aid package amid increased calls for help. And the White House is working on a plan to pay oil producers to keep crude in the ground. Wow, crazy stuff. Check out all the Pro Farmer has to offer by going to tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Last week, AgriTalk paid tribute to farmers, agronomists, and all of agriculture chasing the dream during Agronomy Week. Our coverage is brought to you by DeKalb Asgro and Delta Pine. Learn more at agronomyweek.com.
Ooh, Agricuda.
Wow. Welcome back to AgriCuda, everyone. I'm your host, Jeff Laurie. That is Davis Michelson.
Hello.
And we are talking to Bill Biederman today.
Before Dude, it's getting back, weird down here.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. Before we get back.
That's okay.
Huh? Are we sure that, it's are we sure that it's Davis number one that's running the show today?
I'll never tell.
Could this be a copy of a copy?
The deeper it gets, the more you'll know.
A copy? Give us a recap.
Chip, July hard red winter wheat was 10.25 cents lower today at 476.75. July SRW dropped a dime, 530.5. May corn futures were a half cent higher, 319.75. December corn closed at 341. That's down 1.75 cents today. May soybean futures 5.25 cents lower, 836.75. November 2020 bean futures closed at 854.5, down 5.25 cents. On the livestock side, June live cattle gained $1.65 to close at 86.47.5, and May feeders surged $2.90 to 118.47.5. May lean hogs were 212.5 lower, 37.32.5, and now with much fanfare, back to Chip Laurie.
All right. Thanks, Davis. Ten Bill four. Biederman, agmarket.net. Bill, producer sentiment. Let's go to this cattle industry, beef industry for a second. Bill, I don't care. You could say anything benign, completely 100% benign about the cattle market or the beef market right now. And about one third of the industry will call you an idiot. The other one, another one third would say that what you just reported is exactly wrong. And the other third would say, you're right, but that's what's wrong with the industry. I've never seen anything like it.
Well, it's almost impossible to explain to anybody. I was listening in on a seminar last week of, had some pretty high-powered people on it, and they're just really not even answering the questions.
Right.
I don't think they even know. And right. So, you know, all I know, Chip, is this. For the last, this is the fifth week, for 4 weeks straight, I've gone to Sam's, Publix, and Walmart down in between Georgia and Tennessee where I travel back and forth.
Yeah.
And finally, two nights ago, my wife and I went to Knoxville, and for the first time in 5 weeks, we found beef on the shelf.
No,
so we loaded
kidding.
Up. My wife was like, "You're going to die of a heart attack." And I was like, "You know, I don't care. I'm buying a year's worth of beef here." So,
no, I'm not, because I'm working out carrying this beef to the vehicle. I'll be fine.
So, you know, but I was starting to be cranky because I hadn't had my beef in a long time. So,
you know,
but you the point is that you're starting to hear it. We heard it on CNN, and then we heard mm-hmm. it on Fox Business this week, and last yep. night we heard on Glenn Beck. They're talking about a meat shortage.
Yep.
And maybe that's what we need to bring investor money back into commodities. But I bought April cattle. I know you're never supposed to talk about your positions, but I bought April cattle. I don't care right now because they're so discounted to cash. I thought, you know what? Screw it. Mm-hmm. Bring me the cattle. I mean, mm-hmm. I'll take them at a $20 discount to cash.
Sure.
And, you know, I mean, I got stopped out once and I got back in and I'm making money now. But, you know, that at some point in time, cheap is cheap.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right. You know, talking about the beef industry, and I'm trying to be as frank and as honest about what I see happening as I possibly can. You basically got three organizations out there that on their own are solid organizations that are trying to get the administration's attention. They're trying to get the decision makers' attention so that they can promote what they think is the best way out of it. But I tell you, the reaction from those in the industry, the producers, from the cow-calf guys up to the feed yards, everybody's gun-shy right now to say anything because they've all been shot at so many times. It's something like I never thought I would see. What's going to be the outcome in this, in the perishable commodities, dairy, beef, pork, Bill? What do you think the future looks like?
Well, I don't even know how to answer that question until we get more definition of how we resolve the bigger picture, and that's getting people back to work. So, I mean, I do know that based on my neighborhood where there's, you know, high school kids that live here, those families are telling me they're eating more volume of food than
right.
I mean, they can't stand it. They wish they'd go back to school because they don't eat a half a breakfast when they leave and they don't hardly eat anything at school. So, you know, they're just getting eaten out of house and home. Maybe that's why the shelves are empty. But I think if we can get back to work, and I'm guessing it'll be regional, and I'm guessing it'll be county by county, and then I'm guessing rural areas will go back quick. But bottom line is, we don't know how that looks yet. And hopefully, like I said, President Trump is supposed to make some announcements this afternoon.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So let's get away from the now for just a second. And I want to hear some of your big picture observations of what's going on in the markets right now, Bill. I know that you track the cycles. Where are we, and is what's happening, does it fit somehow, some way into any of those cycles that you follow?
Yeah, it does. It's interesting because from an economic standpoint, we are in a cycle, but I mean, obviously it's much, much deeper than what we would have typically
yeah.
expected. Secondly, if you look at like a 25-year chart of soy, of corn, mm-hmm. we're down near the 20-year lows. Now, we're hoping that this holds because for 20 years we've thrown a lot of negatives at it, and it's always bottomed in the price levels that we're at. And if you count 6 months out, it's always higher than where we're at.
Okay.
So something should come along 6 months from now or 12 to 14 months from now that will be significant. But the most significant correlation is if you look at the years 2000 through 2006, we went sideways at a very depressed price for a very long time. And in 2006, we started a super cycle in commodities. Okay. And that had to do with some inflationary policies that went into play. It went into a weaker dollar that went into play. And then, of course, in 2012, when we peaked it out, that was a bad crop year. So, you know, there's a combination of things. But the main thing that happened was demand came in and bought value. And and I really do believe that we're seeing indications that, you know, I mean, China bought corn for the first time.
Yeah.
For us from a very long time. Somebody has been in the market selling about 4,000 puts a day for the last couple of days. And the only MO that kind of matches up with that is probably China. So, I mean, not too many people can sell 4,000 options a day. And so we're just seeing indications that there's value. We've got food companies, you know, they're scaled down buying here, which is a good sign. And the farmers aren't selling. I mean, the farmers are not going to sell here. The they're going to depend on their insurance to cover their risk. And the only selling that's going on is just pure cash flow requirement.
Right.
So when you look at that, the balance sheet to us looks like we're at value. You know, the question is what's going to push us out of here? And I believe that the fiscal infusion of cash, once we see that confidence level that you talked about earlier kicking in, you're going to see a lot of investor money come in for commodities. You know, you look at inflation-based policies, and it drives fuel and food. Those are the two commodities that always lead from the funds buying in the commodity sector, because those are the two most inelastic commodities there is. We're always going to buy fuel no matter what price. We're always going to buy food no matter what price. We're not trading tennis shoes. We're trading food.
No doubt. Hey, the on the demand side of thing, and because we are talking about food, can we see enough exports in ethanol, in corn, in beans, in beef, in pork to jar us out of the funk that we are in right now?
Well, I think we, when we run all the numbers, I mean, obviously what we're losing in ethanol is just, you know, overwhelming. Now, if FAPRI is right, I don't think it'll be that hard to overcome through feed use and exports, you know, if it's only 450 million. But if it's the billion bushels worth of corn that some people say, and I think they're a little bit high, you know, that you won't be able to overcome that. So it will depend on what that number ends up with. But we're using about 600. We're increasing our feed use to over 6 billion. So out of that 600, 400 of it will be made up with feed use. And then the question will be China on the exports. I mean, they're only using a 1.725 on the export number. So it would be easy to bump that up if China came in. But right now, our exports are still running behind.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Bill, can we do this in a couple, 3 weeks again? I want to get an update from you.
Yeah, we'd love to. I, you bet.
Sounds good. Take care, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, bye.
All right, that's Bill Biederman, agmarket.net. Man, oh man, really good perspective. Relying on a lot of experience right there. When we come back, Davis and I will wrap up hour two of today's Agri Talk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
I'm just thinking of Bill walking into a grocery store and walking out with as much beef as he could load in that vehicle.
Yeah. I wonder what he's driving. I'm imagining like a 76 Chevy van with one of those cool like teardrop windows on the back type of deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I don't think that's Bill, but it could be. It could
might be. I would.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Exactly right.
I actually had the I had a very special moment with some Walmart shoppers just yesterday. We were just doing just a little bit of shopping, you know, whatever, nothing major. And happened to, just for a laugh, go down to the toilet paper aisle. And there was toilet paper. I mean, and seriously, the mood the mood in that aisle was so, so excited, and people were just talking to each other and hub, 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 hub. Oh, there's toilet paper. Oh, I don't even need toilet paper, but there's paper. It was wonderful.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's those that were saying, I don't even need it, but I'm going to buy some.
Well, yeah.
Guilty. Well, at least I know where to go.
If you need it that bad, come on over, buddy. We got you.
I will. Very good. Very good. The meat situation, and it's more an animal situation. I want people to understand that, because some people and people that I've got a lot of respect for, I think, are still getting this wrong.
Okay.
Because they're still asking, when are we going to see USDA step in and start buying beef, pork, poultry, and taking it out to the food banks and nutrition programs that are helping the needy? And that's all fine and good. That's all fine and good. But I just don't think that is the immediacy of this market. The immediacy of this market is making sure that we can process the animals. Because if we can't do that, you guys, we're in a load of trouble. We are in a load of trouble. And I saw USDA Secretary Perdue in two different spots today. I heard another interview that he did, and you can tell that he's uncomfortable with the question of when is USDA going to start buying, because they will buy. They will buy product, dairy product, meats, and they'll get it out there into those food banks and the nutrition programs. But you can see him using words that one word that I hadn't thought of using in describing the protein or the meat supply chain out there was synchronization.
Mm-hmm.
But Perdue used it today, and I was like, you know what? That's a dadgum good word to use, because it's all one big synchronized unit. It's the producer, and it goes back to when a finishing house gets the wiener pigs and puts them on feed, and immediately contracts says, gets in contact with the packing house and says, okay, I just filled up this house. They're going to be ready to go on this day. In five months, okay? So that synchronization that has turned our meat supply into a wholesome, safe, cheap to the consumer in many ways, not always, cheap to the consumer in many ways, it's that whole synchronization that has been disrupted and is being disrupted by the labor issues. That is what we have to fix and what we have to assure is going to remain in place, or the disruption turns into destruction. And that we can't, we don't want to see that happen. So, you know, that's one of the reasons that you know, my question is, What does USDA have planned to make sure that we're going to see these packing houses stay open? And Bill and I talked about consumer confidence. Well, there's such a thing as worker confidence too. Those workers have to be confident of a couple of things. Mm-hmm. Number one, that the environment that they're working in is safe. That they're not going to walk in healthy and walk out sick. Okay, that's number one. They also have to be confident that what they are doing is makes the most sense for them financially.
You're talking about the unemployment now.
Yep. And with the programs that are out there and some of the confusion among some, and the scuttlebutt that is flying around the workers at some of the plants. Many believe that it's they're financially better off if they're on unemployment.
Yep.
Well, what if you've got a family and you've got health insurance?
Yeah.
There are other advantages to just showing up to work.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, well, you and I get to do it every day.
I know. We are blessed and fortunate.
Unbelievable.
That way. And we appreciate you listeners too for making that possible for us. We kind of got a little symbiotic circle going here. The other thing is with these, if you shutter a packing plant because of this stuff, I haven't even heard a discussion of what it looks like. Okay, now the conditions are correct and we're ready to reopen, restart production, get this thing back, back to 100% capacity. I don't even know if anyone, maybe I just haven't seen it, is anyone even talking that way?
There is some talk about it, and it's going to have to be just like a startup. You shift it up, okay? Do a shift, and then when you've got one shift working well, you add a second shift, okay?
That's so gonna it's going to
yep, it's going to be a process, no doubt about it. We're going to talk more about this tomorrow morning. We got a free for all going. Wiesmeyer, Johnson and Haney, and tomorrow afternoon we're back to talking cattle. Got Scott Barlick from Coima, Coima and Barlick right here on AgriTalk.